Sports Professor Rick Haro. Welcome to Beyond the Scoreboard, an inside look at the trillion-dollar business of sports at the All-Star break. Great first half for the Red Sox, mediocre first half for the Cubs, interesting first half for the White Sox. Major League Baseball takes center stage for a few days. Interesting week next week. We have a day where nothing happens, the Wednesday, the Monday at least, the Home Run Derby. Talk NBA free agency, talk NHL to a lesser extent, talk international as a lot of the scene shifts to across the pond. And we talk about Daytona after the Coke Zero 400 getting ready for their second half. Wimbledon, one of the big events across the pond, and more. If you want to subscribe to our iTunes feed, look for us on Stitcher, Google Play, Audio Boom. And as always, the top 15 items laid out pretty neatly on CSNNE.com. And the same in Chicago. We have a really interesting Milton Lee, CEO of Key Motion, interview at the end of this. It'll give you a secret if you're a small college or if you put on some major events, how you can get on TV and not break the bank. That's a tip coming up for New Englanders, Midwesterners, and everything in between. But let's look at some of the issues. Well, the first one, near and dear to my heart, I was part of the old effort to bring baseball to South Florida seemingly years and years ago. But now that the All-Star game heading to Miami, the $280 on the official All-Star website, full strip of tickets for $315 for StubHub, Home Run Derby, All-Star Sunday, the game itself. Tickets will increase, by the way, but the minimums are interesting. And if you want to watch a Giancarlo Carlos Stanton or Aaron Judge dinger, it might be the left field terrace behind the Budweiser Bowtie Bar. Have frequented it many times, and the Red Sox fans can take a rest, and the Cubs fans wondering if second half can begin the magic they've seemed to have lost in the first half. Bottom line, by the way, from a boardroom perspective, the first World Series, according to collective bargaining agreement, that not going to determine home field advantage in it by the All-Star game. It's only bonuses. Each player on the winning team gets 20, and the World Series protocol returns to rewarding home field advantage based on the team with the best record. By the way, 14 of the All-Star games played the old way. American League won 11 of them. And if the Dodgers-Padres game we attended and some of the other ones this last week are any indication, baseball's got a lot to do on its pace of play improvements. But headed to Miami, it'll be interesting. I'll report there next week. Speaking of the Marlins, Derek Jeter now is believed to have enough funds to buy them at $1.3 billion. He prepared to sell the team for something less, saying Jeffrey Loria. Maybe in the $1.2 billion range. Well, that's $100 million among friends. Current Marlins owner Jeffrey Loria has set the goal of selling the team by the end of July, leaving him only a few weeks to get the deal done for his ideal deadline. The three bidding groups are not considered favorites, none of them, but everybody seems to be jockeying for position, a new day, a new headline. Here's my take. If he succeeds, Jeter joins a rarefied group of former standout pro athletes turned team owners, Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson. Will Peyton Manning be next? I guess we'll have to see. Let's go across the pond for the first of the mega events there, British Open, Tour de France. But how about Wimbledon? Wimbledon turns 140 this year. Happy birthday. 70th anniversary of its first live championship match TV broadcast. 50 years in color. And obviously the sports media gotten global since then, and confirmed by Chinese media Sina Sports inking an agreement with Wimbledon to become an official Wimbledon partner for the next three editions. The 2017 tournament through 2019, Sina helps promote Wimbledon in China, delivering news, highlights, live scores, other exclusive content via its popular Sina Weibo social platform. And here's the take. Not nice round milestone number, in case you're wondering. Wimbledon, Wimbledon finally incorporated the yellow Slazenger tennis ball into play in 1986, a full 14 years after the ITF sanctioned them for use. Slazenger had been the official ball of Wimbledon since the early 1900s. We know Wimbledon plays hard to get, but get ready for a couple of weeks of really, really good tennis. And speaking of Wimbledon, the ITF shaking some things up. They've approved a plan to host the final rounds of the Davis Cup men's competition and the Fed Cup women's team competition over the next 3 years. Combining the two premier events, the ITF hoping to create a World Cup of Tennis. While the decision is not final, two-thirds vote from the ITF full membership necessary to approve the change. The new event could last from 5 to 9 days, depending on the format, and would be held in the Davis Cup final traditional time slot in late November. And the take is this: another key component the ITF just approved, the first site of the new combined annual event. Geneva ultimately beat out Turin, Wuhan, Miami, Istanbul, and Copenhagen. A World Cup of tennis, indeed. Well, let's talk football, because you can't talk football early enough. Patriot fans, Bear fans, everybody, let's remember that the camps are open just a couple weeks after the All-Star game in baseball and the Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio, that first week in August. You can hardly wait. Certainly Amazon can't. Fresh off its $14 billion acquisition of Whole Foods, they slapped a price tag of up to $3 million on its advertising packages for its streams of NFL games next season. The package is said to include 30-second spots during the company's 10 live Thursday night football games. It bought it for $50 million this last year, and it's made available to Amazon Prime Video subscribers. Word of Amazon's intentions coincided with reports of the king of e-commerce closing in on a potentially game-changing deal with Nike. Reports say that the sportswear giant will soon begin selling its merchandise directly on Amazon's platform rather than through third-party sellers, a move analysts say will reduce sales of counterfeit Nike products on Amazon and give Nike, that set an ambitious goal of reaching $50 billion in revenue by 2020 despite slowing growth in bricks-and-mortar retail, gives them greater control over how its products are displayed and sold. And my take is this: Nike plays on a big field, Amazon on a bigger one. How about the NFL in other contexts? Well, they struck gold with Amazon, but they may have struck out in China. The league changed its plans, is now targeting the 2019 season to host a game in the Asian country, not 18. NFL VP International Mark Waller even noted the league is considering playing the opening regular season game of the 2019 season in China, helping to kick off the NFL's 100th anniversary in grand fashion. Waller says it may make better sense to look at that game as an opportunity to celebrate our 100 years in an event we can pull off a way to look forward to the future. The NFL stated it's no rush to add another international game to the current slate. 4 London games, 1 Mexico, and the start of the Tottenham partnership next season when the club's new stadium will host 2 games. And my take is this: the NFL actually aware of not trying to spread itself too thin, especially across multiple oceans. So Patriots, Bears, and others, the NFL marquee teams, may go to China, but not anytime soon. But let's talk, and we segued to international stuff. So, and we began with NFL across the pond and otherwise. Look at soccer. We've always been aspirational. The MLS has always tried to bring the Revolution and the Fire and other of those teams as an international brand. But questions have been raised over MLS's timeline for expansion to 28 teams. Don Garber, the commissioner, stated in January it hopes to announce its 25th and 26th franchises by the end of the year. Cities across the U.S., almost all of the ownership groups landing to covet MLS teams, have come up against a litany of issues: political opposition, financial red tape, continued public apathy toward the use of public money. Of the 12 groups in the running, only Sacramento, whose USL team, Republic FC, poised to begin work on a new stadium, has fulfilled all of the MLS expansion criteria. 2 of the other early favorites, St. Louis and San Diego, have run into public opposition, and perhaps as a hangover of recent NFL departures. No group dropped out of the race, but the teams that are interested in moving forward was once a sprint contested by 12 fit and fast runners. It's become a race of attrition that'll be won by those left standing, according to Sports Illustrated. And my take is this: league expansion is a marathon, as we said, not a sprint, and Garber and company will take all the time it needs to get it right at the 25th and 26th time. But there are other international issues that are really important. For example, the UEFA Champions League getting expanded coverage, entering a partnership with Facebook, broadcast a slate of games over the last and next few seasons, new media becoming old hat in sports broadcasting realm, as Facebook now joins Amazon, Twitter, and Verizon as securing top-level sports rights, and the UEFA Championship, of course, a huge event to secure. When you think of some other events internationally as well, Tokyo and the 2020 Olympics featuring an international twist to keep fans engaged. The games at urban sports venues opened for public use while the Olympics in progress. Olympic Committee VP John Coates confirmed the fans on the ground in Tokyo during the Olympics in 3 years actually be able to use certain venues for recreational events. Skateboard, sport climbing, BMX freestyle will be fair game. And he says, "We're very pleased with this. As you know, we've introduced your recommendation to the new sports of sports climbing, skateboarding, and surfing," said Coates, "to the Tokyo folks. And then recently, in cycling, we've introduced BMX freestyle with these sports, and what we want to do is bring them close to the people. And here's my take, a good one. The more lifestyle sports popular with young amateurs are adopted by the IOC, the more these millennials will be inclined to watch the games, being able to compete side by side with Olympians in actual competitive venues, and it only ups the interest factor." Well, we talked international. How about returning back to NASCAR? It's about as domestic as you can get, but it's important for those of us who deal with Loudoun and Chicagoland and other speedways across the country. As it celebrates a signature 4th of July holiday weekend race in Daytona, they announced, NASCAR did, the results from the 2017 Fortune 500 study of brands in the stock car sport. The sanctioning body saying results showed that 139, or 28 of all Fortune 500 companies, now invest in NASCAR across teams, tracks, and the series. NASCAR says it's up 7% from last year and continues a trend of the number either being flat or up every year since 2012. NASCAR added nearly half of the Fortune 100 companies are now invested in the sport. In another cross-pollination, NASCAR and Daytona International Speedway on Friday night gave NASCAR fans a look at other increasingly popular forms of ring competition. USA Today put it, hosted MMA exhibition match from the Professional Fighters League. The organization looking at the possibility of scheduling events at other NASCAR tracks as part of its 2018 season. And the take is obvious. From ringing the bell on Wall Street to diversifying its own ring, NASCAR clearly on the upswing as the second half of the 2017 season gets underway. What have we missed? Celtic fans incredibly excited about the guys, the Dukies, including Jason Tatum and others. And the important issue here is not just the fact that teams are building, Chicago may be rebuilding, but how about representing a new standard as far as player revenue and revenue otherwise? Fresh off its second NBA championship, Warrior Stephen Curry, 5-year, $201 million extension, as we know. He's the first NBA star signing the Supermax, crossing the $200 million threshold, but more to come. Curry, as the San Francisco Chronicle notes, has been the biggest bargain in sports for the past four seasons. The NBA, a big payday coming, and it's helped make everyone around him rich. The NBA revealed that a salary cap next year, $99 million. Luxury tax line, $119 million. Slight decreases, according to the league projections, but don't hold a bake sale for anybody. The minimum team salary, $89 million, 90% of the cap. And regardless of Curry's raise and the new NBA numbers, Warriors owner Joe Lacob and Peter Guber keep their core championship team for at least one more season. And how about Andre Iguodala? He hadn't talked about retirement, but he's a good example of the post-NBA career life. Teamed up with media channel Cheddar to create a late-night variety show called Evenings with Andre. He hopes the show, featuring interviews and guests from business, technology, sports, and entertainment, ultimately be picked up by premium TV network for streaming service. And if no premium buyers emerge, Cheddar will broadcast it on Facebook, Twitter, and its own streaming platforms. He's been with the Warriors a few years now. He'll tap into his Silicon Valley connections to interview starting founders. And Cheddar, the startup business founded by former BuzzFeed executive John Steinberg, offers live stream business news programming aimed at younger audiences and has said it reaches more than a million live viewers daily. And my take, yet another example of on-court success and championship rings begetting off-court opportunities for business-savvy athletes. Well, business-savvy athletes are key in the entire world of major league sports. But the more sports you get on television and the more sports you're able to focus the budgets and make it affordable, the more rights, the more celebrities, and the more movement in the social media space. Milton Key, the CEO of Key Motion, is a company that allows for remote telecasts of all games and events without humans. Streaming potential for Title IX, smaller sports, new technology allowing for games to be broadcast and announced remotely, and more importantly to us, especially those of us in the NBA startup, NBA rebranding perspective. He was the 10-year primary advisor to Russian billionaire Mikhail Prokhorov and his purchase of the Brooklyn Nets, the USA abroad, NBA abroad, and the Russia relationship. He went to the University of Pennsylvania. He played basketball there, a BA in international relations, 9 years on Wall Street, and IMG Bearings and SEC Capital. The guy is really tuned in. But the most important issue for us is any small college, any Title IX, anybody who wants to get their sport on TV can use this Key Motion technology and get it done. And Milton Lee will explain how. Recaro, Sloan Analytics, MIT conference, winding down day one, and people are still clamoring for those conversations with guys in a position of hiring, people in a position of getting advice. This still is one of the most dynamic conferences you could ever deal with sports analytics. I find it ironic, we've talked about it before, that sports analytics 10 years ago was just a couple of guys with an abacus. Not really, but it's certainly progressed very significantly over time. Milton Lee, the CEO of Key Motion, one of those companies that we'll learn a little bit more about. We'll also remember some of your experiences with the Barclays Center and the Nets. Milton, good to see you. Thank you very much.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me, buddy.
Absolutely. And so a shameless plug early. Thank you for telling me at the beginning of this interview that right. You're one of the two or three people that actually read my book and got something out of it. Thank you.
It was very helpful. I mean, if you're not in that arena, you have no idea what goes into building an arena and all the constituents involved.
Well,
it was very helpful.
Well put on that. And you kind of cut your early teeth, Ratner, Barclays Center, that whole development process in the Nets and Prokhorov. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I came on as Prokhorov's advisor when he was looking at the team, and obviously Barclays Center was integral to that deal. And as Prokhorov was going to put in 45% of the funding for Barclays Center, he was going to have a big say in both how it got built, but also, you know, the constituents were going to have to approve Prokhorov and his involvement in it. So there was a lot of what was not obvious to me is how unique an arena development is, because you have so many different constituents that use it on a daily basis. And to fulfill all those people's needs is really an incredible task.
Well, and certainly it happens that way in every city, probably magnified in a place like Brooklyn, where there were a whole bunch of other intra-borough politics,
sure,
as
sure.
well as the whole public-private partnership piece.
That's actually what I took away from your book, and the amount of people that you had to appease, for lack of a better word, to bring them all to the table and get people to agree on a compromise that fulfills everyone's needs. A place like Brooklyn, hardcore union intensive, a project that was delayed year after year after year. I mean, you went through this.
Yeah.
Things look like they don't happen, and then magically they come together at the last minute.
And when something's not happening, it's because things are happening elsewhere that you don't see.
Exactly.
Probably part of the issue. You look back on your Nets experience, positive, building something that's really good. Does it matter that the team's only won 9 games at this point to you? How do you feel?
I would say that it doesn't keep me up at night, and I'd feel a lot better if they were winning 60 games this season.
Yeah.
But, you know, certain decisions were made, as Adam Silver just talked about, we really went for it. And, you know, the pain afterwards is probably greater than anticipated. Nobody's happy about where the Nets are right now, including probably the league. In fact, the only people that are happy are the people in Boston. But, you know, we did a lot of great things. Moving a franchise from New Jersey to Brooklyn. I was also in charge of their analytics. I was in charge of their minor league operations. And bringing the first international owner to the NBA, the first majority international owner. There are a lot of great things to be proud of.
Let's return to that in a minute, but the Boston thing is interesting since this is distributed in Boston as well. So everybody feels good about the league, except unless you're competitive in the Atlantic Division, and here it is. Right. So the interesting thing about the NBA and competitive balance, if you were to advise the Celtics today, which you're not, but give us some perspective on where you think they sit.
I was just having a conversation with a Celtics executive, and I was marveling at the fact that they're 39-22 with no superstars, with potentially a number one pick in the next two drafts. This year, which may be a monumental draft, they're sitting pretty. I thought it was a no-brainer not to trade for Paul George and give up the assets that they were being asked for. Danny Ainge is one of the great poker players in the game of front office sports, and I think he's doing a perfect job. He's got all the leverage.
Well, the interesting thing about the dynamic nature of the salary cap and the television dollars that are available is I would rather have money than no money, but money can't always buy you happiness.
Absolutely.
You got to make some good decisions with those dollars.
Absolutely. Okay. And historically, a lot of teams have made poor decisions with those dollars. Right. But the Celtics are well positioned going forward.
Well, and that's an interesting comment for Boston fans. But back to your representation of Prokhorov. When you say you brought a foreign owner, it's not just any foreign owner. It's a Russian owner. And the dynamics of a Russian owner mixing with everybody else. Tell us some stories that nobody else has heard.
Fake stories or real stories?
Yeah, good answer.
You know,
good answer. Stories you're willing to tell.
You know, Prokhorov's an interesting guy. Somewhat, I think, a little misconceived. You know, he's known as this playboy that flies around the world and does all these macho things, which he does. He's really an avid sportsman. But there's an element of him that's actually very shy. And he's also very business-oriented in today's day and age. However, does not use a computer, does not use a cell phone, really is old school, slow thinking, and understands where the pressure points and when the time to move is. He had looked at the Nets previously, but after the 08 crisis in 09, he understood what kind of deal he could get, and he pounced on what he thought, you know, was a great opportunity.
And it's a real estate deal, too.
Exactly.
Which is key. What was it like dealing with a person in this day and age that was old school technologically?
Well, he had enough people around him that would filter the information to him. What I think was challenging, one of the challenges maybe for Prokhorov and his chief staff people is that in European basketball, in Russia specifically, there's just a different way of doing business than in the U.S. And so there's no salary cap restrictions. There isn't the evenness of the playing field in a lot of ways that the NBA brings. And maybe it took them a little while to get up the learning curve. And so communicating some of those things when they're versed on a certain way of doing things, you know, it's a cultural difference in a lot of ways. You know, that was something that they are well aware of now.
Well, good luck to the Brooklyn Nets, but you're on to other things.
Yeah.
So tell us about KeyMotion.
Yeah, KeyMotion is a fantastic technology. It's an automated video production of professional basketball games. And so, similar to a driverless car, we film, produce, and stream basketball games without cameramen. Now, why that's important is because it's actually very expensive to produce NBA games. It costs upwards of $100,000 per night to produce a game. For the games that we're producing, and we produce five professional leagues over in Europe, when you break down the costs over the course of the season, it's sub $1,000 per game, HD quality, completely produced, and advertising embedded.
cameramen around the country tonight. But leagues and teams around the country, that's the man you ought to be talking to.
No. Wait. You say that in jest. But yeah, I will say that it's actually much more about unlocking all those events, all those stories that nobody's ever been able to see before.
Right.
All those second-tier sports, the Division II, we're currently streaming NAIA games on Fox Sports. We're going to do 31 games in 6 days for the NAIA National Tournament with no human beings. Now, previously, nobody ever got to see those events. Nobody got to see those high school rivalries that maybe we wanted, the incredible plays from across the world that nobody captured. And Keymotion's going to allow people to produce all those events, monetize the content, and deliver it to all these people. And I call it what's happening in society. We want less of more. We want little snapshots of everything out there. We don't want more of more because we only have this much attention span.
Right.
So we're going to deliver less of more.
So the more of more, however, as it relates to D2 and D3 and all of that in high school, is you do really provide the technical streaming of all of the game. It's just a question of which pieces somebody wants to see. They're able to watch any part of it.
So the most powerful part of our solution is the fact that we automate the video production. Again, our cameras will move from side to side, panning in, zooming out, making it look like a human being is behind there. And that is really a powerful solution.
So, as the sun sets over us, I know we've got some issues with the sun, but that's okay. Are we still okay to deal with this? Good. Okay. Talk fast. No. the interesting part about your solution too is that I assume as you become the Mother Teresa of otherwise non-televised sports and bring it to the masses, how do you monetize?
We're a subscription model, so we sell on 3 and 4 year contracts. It's not so different than a car lease. I make a lot of analogies to what's going on in the car industry, not only with driverless cars, but also that we are a leasing model. And we hope that at the end of that 3 year cycle, you're going to upgrade to our new model for another 4 year cycle, which is what just happened in France. We operated there the previous 3 years, 20 arenas. Now we're in 45 arenas for the next 4 years.
So the next driverless airplane or car that has an issue, you're going to start...
Our technology can do that as well.
Yes. I'm sure it could. So the future of this, and let's back up for a second. The thing you have in common, absent the fact that you are much more experienced and you probably have more access to capital than others, is that there are loads of technology opportunities out there. And I haven't talked to one person in the last day who says they have a bad idea. How do you take it from an idea where you have some kind of an epiphany moment to actually getting it done, getting it off the ground?
Yeah. There's a lot of sleepless nights.
Yeah.
There's a lot of begging for business. And then there's oftentimes, in a trajectory of a small business, a moment of inflection where somebody adopts you that maybe you didn't even think was going to be the adopter, and they validate what you're doing. And that's important. So Peter Guber was giving a speech about the most important time in a rocket's trajectory into space is the first 3 seconds. Because if you can lift off of that, you're pretty good to go. We've cleared the first 3 seconds, we hope. And we feel like we're pretty good to go.
Are you outside the Earth's gravitational pull yet or not?
We hope. There'll be room for you.
But if there's room for me, then we're okay,
with
man.
Clients like Golden State Warriors, Villanova Wildcats, all of France, Fox Sports, we feel like we're ready to continue lifting off.
And so 5 years from now, what do you look like?
We're in 110 arenas around the world right now in 10 countries, 3 continents. 5 years from now, it's 5,000 arenas on 6 of the continents. Maybe Africa, not yet. So 5 continents. And we are producing live streaming and possibly broadcasting on TV. If TV is still a medium at that point, we don't even know where the world is going to go. I talked about earlier today, you think of what happened in the last week.
Yeah.
MLBAM rumored to be streamed on Facebook Live.
Right, YouTube. And by the way, they also cut a deal with the Game of Thrones.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, which is kind of an interesting way to get back to their roots. So that's another another interesting thing.
YouTube announcing their TV platform, an OTT competitor to what's being announced on TV, and then Snapchat's IPO. So the way that content is being digested is evolving at an incredible place. We're glad that we're part of the curation of this content, which we think is not as crowded as all of those other areas.
I find it an honor or gratuitous that you actually would tell me that you read my book and learned some of the business principles. But more important than that, good luck in the future. This is a can't miss, and I really appreciate the time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
Awesome.
We'd like to thank Milton Lee. We'd like to thank his innovations for talking about sports technology and remote broadcasts of television. We'd like to thank everybody getting ready for the All-Star Game, NBA over, NHL over. Next week, a retrospective on the All-Star Game, heading into the final week of Wimbledon, the British Open, and otherwise. And we'd like to thank you for listening and joining us once again when we go Beyond the Scoreboard.